Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Esquire Coaching Radio, where we help attorneys achieve unparalleled personal and professional success. And now here's your host, Anne Jenrette Thomas.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Esquire Coaching Radio Show. It's such a pleasure to be here with all of you today. As you know, Esquire Coaching is a national coaching and consulting firm that is dedicated to empowering lawyers to happily succeed in the business of law. To that end, we discuss the full range of topics from building business to getting a job to work-life balance and everything in between. Today, we have a very special guest who's really near and dear to my heart, Valerie Borek, who's going to talk to us about parenting rights, vaccines, and the law. I'm really excited about it. It's a hot topic, so just get ready to hear Valerie. So here in this episode, we're going to get an overview of a law practice that is filling a need by creating a niche in parenting rights. And we're going to zoom in on one particular aspect of that practice that's really timely right now, and that's vaccines and the law. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest, Valerie Borek. Valerie is founder of the V. Borek Law Firm and has been helping clients since 2010. Her practice focuses on parenting rights and supports the health and wealth of families. She's licensed in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and the Court of Federal Claims. She's also a founding director of the Birth Rights Bar Association. Valerie writes and speaks on topics in parenting rights for Fearless Parent, Chadsford Live, and her own blog at www.vboreklaw.com. That's VBOREK law.com. Welcome, Valerie.
Hi, Anne. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you here. I think this is a really important topic, and especially, you know, March is Women's History Month, and this is an issue that I think is something that's very important to a lot of women, and one that you don't see or hear talk of, you know, spoken about too often, at least not in the legal circles that I've seen. So I just I'm so delighted that you're here and that you're innovating in this area of the law.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for having me. And it's also, you know, right now there's a lot about vaccines in the news, but it's really hard to find unbiased and unemotional information about it. So that's something that I strive to provide with my practice and with my counsel.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So let's start there. Tell us a little bit about your firm and its focus.
Okay, great. So I founded my firm to help parents, basically. I support parents in issues of their fundamental rights to privacy and in parenting, making parenting choices, and in keeping families strong. My practice covers things like healthcare autonomy in issues of birthing rights and in vaccines. And this includes sometimes when Child Protective Services is called in because a parent's medical choice is questioned, which can happen even when a parent asks for a second opinion. I handle also estate planning and, you know, contracts that keep families strong, such as adoption contracts or surrogacy contracts and things like that. And these documents are especially really important for families that are, I guess, referred to as non-traditional families, so unmarried partners and gay families. And even if now, if you're in a state that allows for marriage, these documents are still really important. Things like step-parent adoption can really be an asset to your family and can help prevent any problems down the line. So that's basically what my firm is doing, is just focusing on keeping families strong and helping out when family rights are violated.
It's an important topic, and not one that I hear too many lawyers practicing. So in your experience, are there many other attorneys practicing in the niche of parenting rights?
There are some attorneys out there. They're across the country, not necessarily calling themselves parenting rights attorneys, but I'd love to turn that conversation around and help people understand that there is a niche, there is a need. And so I know attorneys working across the country in birthing rights, most of them are coming to it from an already established practice, or, you know, people that are starting their careers might be starting out. I know a small handful of people that are just focusing on birthing rights. As far as vaccines go, most attorneys aren't just practicing in the Court of Federal Claims. That's not really that's really something that an attorney does because they feel it in their heart they know that they can really help people. It's not necessarily, it's not like the med mal cases or things like that that might help them keep their doors open and things like that. So there are attorneys across the country, especially now the CPS cases, there are some that are starting to really specialize in parenting rights when CPS is involved. But I don't know of anyone that's just marketing their practice specifically to parents and just addressing parenting rights issues.
So really innovative, you know, in being able to just carve out something that's essential and something, frankly, that, you know, is near and dear to the community's heart. When parenting rights is, you know, when you're a parent, it's something that being able to ensure that your children are okay, that they're living in a way that is consistent with your own personal values, it's really important. And so now I feel like you're helping to almost like stake a claim in the legal field and saying, okay, this is a practice area that needs to be separately defined. So tell us a little bit about what brought you to this point, to this niche.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I will also say I like the way that you put it about seeing that this is an area that needs to be defined, and I do see it akin to something like elder law. So that's a relatively new kind of specialization for attorneys, and it, you know, rapidly grew because there was such a need for people to address. It still, you know, addresses a wide variety of traditional practice areas, but specific to the needs of the client. So that's how I see this, you know, growing niche of parenting rights is very akin to that kind of thing. So the way I found myself here, though, is, you know, it's my own personal experiences pointed the way and showed me this need. I'm a strong proponent of individual and family rights to begin with. I was drawn to healthcare law when I was beginning my studies of law. I have my undergrad degree in chemistry, so I was already able to do, you know, when I was working in other law offices, reading medical records and things like that came very easily to me. I worked as a CASA, which is a court-appointed special advocate, kind of akin to a GAL in the family court system, so I became familiar with the CPS practices and how that procedure happens for families. I'm also a home birth mom, so that opened the door wide open for me on the need for attorneys to address rights in birth law and in how and where a woman exercises her right, you know, in that health arena, in access to care and supporting midwives and in addressing forced medical care during pregnancy, which is something that we don't talk about that much or at all in this country. We don't really understand that it's happening. And there's this dichotomy when you go into a healthcare practice, you know, you're two people, basically. And so there's this kind of false maternal-fetal conflict that kind of comes up that can cause a woman, a mother, to abdicate her rights and to think that she can't say no to certain medical procedures. So there's definitely a need for rights attorneys there as well. And with the background that I have in chemistry, that, you know, the very next step, the natural step for me was into vaccine law, in rights and in injury petitions, because I, you know, feel already comfortable with the science behind it. So I'm able to, you know, that's a real asset when it comes to bringing petitions in the vaccine court, as it's called.
Wow. You know, it's funny. When I was in college, I was very much involved as an activist, and one of the sayings was that the personal is political. And hearing your story, hearing your own personal story of having a home birth and realizing the need for additional rights and making sure that women are aware of what their rights are, you really are, you're pioneering a whole movement. I mean, it's funny, Valerie, because we're celebrating Women's History Month, and I feel like often you see later in time people that you get to celebrate as pioneers, and here I feel like I'm speaking to one in the making, so somebody that I hope we'll be celebrating in the future.
Well, I hope you're right, but, so, you know, I do like to tell people, and honestly so, I just want to work myself out of a job, especially in an area like birth rights. I really find my passion in educating people to make sure that their rights are protected so that I don't get a call later on down the line when something has happened. So that's why I really like to work with people who are working with, you know, pregnant women, basically. I really make an effort to have strong connections to doulas and midwives and lactation consultants and everyone in that arena who supports a pregnant woman so that they have a resource. If something happens, they can, you know, nip it in the bud and a person can know. Because we do, you know, we talk about our free market and about how it makes us, you know, have the strongest healthcare system in the world. We have to understand that we can use that to our advantage. And if you're with a care provider that you're not agreeing with, you find another care provider. So that's, you know, and being able to know your rights and assert them is where I really like to focus my practice.
Mm-hmm. And earlier you were mentioning something about a dichotomy between a fake dichotomy. Is that what you called it? Between the mother and the fetus? So explain a little bit about that. And do you believe that, you know, cases like Roe v. Wade helped create this kind of dichotomy, or give us a little bit of the lay of the land with this?
Wow, that's a big question. Part of it is, yes, I do see it as a false conflict. So let me first, so the term that kind of gets bandied about is that there's this maternal fetal conflict. And, you know, behind that is this concept that a mother would be making decisions that would be contrary to the best health possible, you know, the maximizing the health of her baby. And to me, this is totally absurd. It just creates this false dichotomy, as I said, that, you know, no mother is going into any care provider's office and saying, you know, I really want a home birth and I don't think it's going to be safe for my baby, but, you know, I really need to have this special time. You know, that's not at all how it works. But we have this sensationalist kind of media thing that happens, and that's how people get painted. And it really can skew things when it comes to, you know, conceptualizing rights and even just the interaction that you have if you choose to go into a hospital, which most women do, those interactions with people in the staff and with your OB, it can really, you're treated as if you're not making decisions with, you know, your baby in mind. And it's really not helpful. It's not helpful for patient relationship. It's not helpful in the legal scheme either. So, I mean, I don't even know if we have time to go into things like Roe v. Wade. I mean, that's a whole different ball of wax. So, I mean, I would just say shortly, I mean, yes, that certainly played a part of it, because clearly, you know, that kind of jurisprudence kind of opened the door to creating burdens on exercising rights. I mean, there's entire articles written about this sort of thing, you know, people that have careers based on talking about this sort of thing, so I can't sum it up that quickly. But, you know, the short of it is that Roe v. Wade and its progeny really did kind of create this next phase of jurisprudence, which was then, you know, how much can we limit this right that now exists, you know, according to the Supreme Court. But the birth rights really isn't necessarily about the Roe v. Wade aspect of it. It's more kind of the next phase of looking at, you know, you've got a person who's pregnant and how they want to give birth and where they want to give birth, and exercising that right is what it's about. It's not about whether they want to carry a fetus to term.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about a topic that's, you know, first of all, thank you for clarifying that. I think that was excellent, just so more people understand that the Birth Rights Bar Association and what this whole movement is about is not about whether or not to carry, but having more choice carry and how you, the whole birthing process. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's not necessarily the same as reproductive justice. I mean, it's that term on its own is kind of a loaded term. But, you know, so what the Birth Rights Bar Association and birthing rights focuses on are your rights during pregnancy and your rights in labor as well. And then also, you know, the kind of the flip side to that is access to care and how that care happens and what kind of relationship you have with your care provider, and, you know, just being able to protect your right to choose how you bring a life into this world.
Now, you know, this is one hot topic going into the next. Let's talk about vaccines. Tell us a little bit about what your firm does in this area. We're hearing so much about it now.
Yeah, so thank you for asking about that. Well, first of all, I aim to educate. Again, I would love to be able to prevent problems from happening by empowering people with knowing their rights rather than represent someone on the other side where we have to redress something that's gone wrong or a rights violation. So with respect to education, I offer seminars on vaccine rights and responsibilities. One of them that's coming up, for example, I'm going to be speaking at MommyCon in Washington, D.C. on August 22nd, and the topic specifically is on vaccine rights and responsibilities for parents. So I do that. I also, I blog and things like that that you had mentioned in your intro. I work also with local parenting groups, and when I say local, basically I mean anywhere in the Mid-Atlantic region, basically, but especially in PA and Jersey, which is where I'm licensed and I'm local, and especially with birth workers, because people who are working with people who are pregnant are in a particularly good position to be able to educate people to help them know their rights. So I also counsel people on their vaccine exemption rights. In Pennsylvania, that does include philosophical and religious. I get inquiries about unwanted vaccines and that kind of thing, and especially, since we've got this intersection of, birth and healthcare and vaccine choices, I get calls about Hep B and things, because that's the first thing that's going to happen if you're in a hospital. So, and especially if you're in a situation where you've chosen to have birth at home or in a birthing center, and then you end up transferring into a hospital for whatever reason, it's important to know before you go, what the hospital policies are and even what your own decision is going to be. So I encourage people to do that kind of self-education. I also have been getting calls recently since, there are so many things going on about vaccines in the news. People, different schools and whatnot have kind of upped the ante and have been asking for more information than they used to. I know recently in Pennsylvania, it used to just be about, the school nurse or health official would check off their box about your exemption, and recently they kind of broke it out to if you're religious or philosophical. I've gotten questions about, well, they asked me to explain it. They want a written statement now, and they never asked me about that before. So I counsel people on their rights there and, clarify what it is that they're required to give and what they're not required to give. I am also involved currently in protecting exemption rights. There's legislation being proposed in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania isn't quite out yet, but I do support being able to make that choice. And I do know, there's no such thing as a completely absolute right that can never be infringed upon. But with my understanding of things at this point, there are too many unanswered questions about public health effects and levels of risk that happen with vaccines for a state to override a fundamental right. I don't think that we should take this choice away from parents at this point. There are lesser restrictive ways to address public health. So these are all, vaccine exemptions invoke fundamental rights. Parenting is a fundamental right. And I'm also one of the approximately 130 attorneys in the country admitted to the Court of Federal Claims for vaccine-injured petitions. So the Court of Federal Claims has a special little niche carved out for vaccine-injured petitions because a person can't actually sue a manufacturer directly. So I can handle those claims as well.
That's so fascinating. And in fact, I had never even heard of vaccine court until you and I had started speaking. So can you walk us through a little bit about what exactly happens and in vaccine court and once a claim is filed?
Yeah, sure. So it's basically just a little corner of the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. And so it's seated in Washington, but it does travel around the country from time to time. And I should also point out that this is a court. I can actually represent people across the country. This isn't a state-specific jurisdiction. This is a federal court system. When a person believes that they or their child have been injured by a vaccine, they don't sue a manufacturer because the federal government assumed liability for injury through something called the Vaccine Injury Compensation Act, which was in 1986. And basically the intent behind that was there was a lot of litigation that was going on. Some vaccine manufacturers were going out of business. Their liability insurance was going through the roof because of the lawsuits that were being brought, and it was specifically around the DPT vaccines and, also a little bit before that, polio vaccines. So the federal government, as a policy decision, decided that they didn't want these vaccine manufacturers to go out of business because they wanted the supply for the country to stay up. So they created this system that's referred to as the vaccine court, but it's not actually a court. There's not a judge and a jury. It was intended to be non-adversarial, and it's supposed to be a simplified process. It's not the same kind of rules of evidence and rules of discovery that a person goes through. And basically, the way that it works is that a person can file a petition, not a complaint, like a regular lawsuit would have a complaint. This is a petition, and you're petitioning the federal government. You would be a person who are injured by a vaccine, you're the parent or guardian of a person who's been injured by a vaccine, or you're representing an estate where you say that you've been injured by a vaccine, so you have this kind of claim. And then you'd also, the types of injuries are laid out in what's referred to as the vaccine injury table. And so you've got a list of vaccines on a vaccine table, is the term, that you can bring the claim in this so-called vaccine court. And then in addition to that, you potentially would have an injury that's on this table. It doesn't mean that if you have an injury that hasn't been identified by the government as something that could be caused by this vaccine, that you're just out of luck petition-wise. But it does mean that you have a bit more rigorous process to go through in proving causation to the government. So it does end up being a little bit, people have reported that they feel it's a bit adversarial, but it's certainly not the same as litigation. So the person that hears your claim, go ahead.
No, keep going.
The person that hears your claim isn't a judge. This person is a special master, they're referred to, and they're an attorney that is specially appointed by the Court of Federal Claims to hear these claims. You file a petition with your records up front, and it's a much more informal process. There's an off-the-record kind of conference with the special master where you get kind of an informal opinion about, what's needed to prove your claim, what the most pressing concerns are. There can be a factual hearing if necessary. There's usually an expert hearing when you're trying to prove causation. Like I said, there's no formal discovery process, and sometimes testimony can be presented telephonically. The special masters, they're not like judges. They generally can question witnesses. They can ask for additional documentation, things like that.
So what's fascinating is that this is really, because it's in the federal court, you can technically take clients from anywhere in the U.S. Is that accurate if they're dealing with a vaccine matter?
Yes.
Wow. That's so unique. Not everybody gets to practice in such a way. So that's really fascinating. Now, if you could give one piece of advice to parents from a legal perspective, what would that be, Valerie?
In general, I would just say, the more you know, knowledge is power, basically. Proactively educate yourself the best you can, and you also just try to have open communication the best you can with your child, no matter what their age. So this way, if something's going on in their life that would be a rights violation on your family, a privacy violation, this can happen in education and things like that, especially now we've got all this data that's being collected on our children and, access to data and who can access it. The more communication you have with your child, the better. And then just knowing your rights is the best way to protect your family to prevent any violation. And I would also add to that, just, follow your instincts. If something doesn't seem right to you, follow up on it. Find out really what's going on.
Well said. And, I know you do a lot of writing and even a lot of speaking in the community to try and help people become aware of their rights. Are there any resources that either on your blog or elsewhere that you would recommend for people, parents who might be interested in learning more about this topic, or even other lawyers who might be interested in learning more about this, that they could visit or read up on?
Yeah, so the Birthrights Bar Association website is it's kind of rudimentary right now, but we're getting more and more information up there as we go. And so we do plan on putting links and resources up there for people. As far as the birthing rights go, right now I direct people to National Advocates for Pregnant Women. That's a fantastic resource with up-to-date news articles and happenings and, you know, rights information. There's also an organization called Human Rights and Childbirth, and a few different U.S.-based, you've got Improving Birth, and you've got, there's a website called Birth Monopoly, and the woman that runs that and writes for them, Kristen Pascucci, is phenomenal in, you know, rights awareness and education and things of that nature. As far as, you know, vaccine rights go, right now it's, I think, you know, if you want to know what's going on legislatively, your best bet is to go to nvic.org, so the National Vaccine Information Center. It's nvic.org, and they have a list of all the current legislation that's going on. So that's a good starting point for you. And since there is so much going on legislatively, there are a lot of groups that are popping up on, you know, Facebook. You can definitely do some Facebook searches for, you know, finding local people that are involved in this kind of activism as well.
This is fantastic. And, you know, one final question that I wanted to just ask you, and, you know, you're a solo, and most of the time when we coach solos, there's a fear about doing something that's so visible, so authentically who you are, and maybe polarizing. So what do you have to say about your experience in deciding that you are going to take a stand for something that you believe in and gear your legal practice and your client base toward that? How has that impacted?
You got a little cut off there at the end, so I hope you can still hear me. But the short answer to that would be...
Very sorry.
The short answer is, you know, as I've become, you know, more authentic and had my own personal, you know, passions come through in my law practice, I've gained confidence, and it wasn't necessarily something that I anticipated. You know, I figure, you know, when you're going out on a limb and you're practicing in areas that other people aren't necessarily practicing, and you're kind of forging ahead in that way, and, you know, especially when you're practicing in an area that's as controversial as, you know, vaccines are right now, it can be really daunting, and you can question yourself. But the more I speak out, the more I talk to people, the more I put my opinion out there, and the more it gets challenged, the more confident I become, because it really is truly what I believe in. I really do believe that parents have these rights to protect their family, and I believe that parents should have all the information and knowledge they can have to be able to make conscious choices for their families. So, and that's what I would, initially when I started my legal career, I think I tried to scrub my image as much as possible. And, you know, what that resulted in was me having jobs that really didn't resonate with who I am. And so I also then, you know, on the flip side, it wasn't good necessarily for, you know, my employer or for my clients either, because I wasn't happy. I wasn't doing what I really felt passionate about. Mm-hmm. So that I guess is what it comes down to is, you know, the more I'm allowing my voice and my passion to come through and representing people, I think I'm hope, you know, the better counsel I can be for them.
Wow, it is really powerful. And I have to say, you know, as someone that's been watching you through this process, you have become the go-to person in this area of the law. You've really, you know, you're the person that is getting referrals and people are talking about when it comes to birthing rights or vaccines or anything like that. And so I think you have done something incredibly courageous, and it's paying off. So kudos to you for all of your pioneering efforts and really taking such an important stand.
I appreciate it. It was a little daunting at first. I did get some weird looks. You know, you go to the networking events and you say what you're doing, and it's like, you're doing what? Can you explain that again? I've never really heard of that. But, you know, that's actually pretty awesome. If you can get around feeling insecure about it, you get to plant a seed, and you get to explain to people what this is all about and why it's so important. So once I kind of wrapped my mind around that, it changed the whole thing.
Oh, this is so powerful. You're so powerful. So happy to have you here. Valerie, we are just about out of time. Can you tell our listeners how they can reach you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, my website, it's www.vborecklaw.com.